When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Jonathan Pearce.
The mad side of genius.
Terry Alderton. The Football Friendly.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to JPNT, The Football Friendly, on the back of another incredible week of football. And Mr. Terry Alderton, have you been busy?
Yeah, I've been chewing bread for the ducks up the local pond in Rittle. It's a lot of work. But it's been good fun, and they're happy. So, you know, what a weekend, though, of football, Jonathan. My goodness.
What a strange life you have.
Well, I think it's pretty average. I'll be honest with you. Most times when you put on Match of the Day, the game with the most goals goes up top, doesn't it? But which would have been your game on Saturday.
Mm.
But it was pushed back to third because, of course...
It's one of the worst decisions I've ever seen. Let's bring in our guest, because he's a guest of yours from the World of Comedy, and he'll... have a view on it. You introduced your guest.
Young man, I'll tell you, this young man has only been going, I say young man, he's a young man, but it sounds patronising, doesn't it? This lovely young man has been going only since 2018 as a comedian, and I tell you what, I did a gig with him probably, he's only been going probably 6 months, and you know, usually, Jonathan, you say hello and you're nice, and then the comedian goes on and you go, oh, that was all right, or Lidl again. You know, as in they just talk about Lidl. And then this young man went on and was blew the roof off. And I was like, wow, this kid's good. And then, of course, he's gone on to host now Fantasy Football, and he's flying. And it's the wonderful Andrew Mensah. Hello, Andrew.
Yes, guys. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thanks legends. For being on.
I'm on a podcast with two legends.
People can't see you. We can see you. You're wearing a Palace shirt. You better explain that, because you've got Palace in the family.
Yeah, obviously I got Palace in the family. So I collect football shirts anyway, but I started collecting more Palace shirts because my cousin Eze plays, isn't it? He's the star man right now. So I'm an eagle right now. Feels good.
It's a nice shirt. They can't see that. Maybe we can take a photo of it and put it on the stuff.
94-95 season. TDK sponsor.
Do you know? I've just twigged where I do not know you from when you were at BT Sport, because I do the French football for BT. Well, TNT as it is now.
That's where you
came up through, wasn't it? And you,
what
you wore?
But even before that, I was at BT. I was an apprentice. I was making like teas and coffees and that, and heating up producers' lasagna and all that stupid shit. And then I ended up pitching the idea called What I Wore, which is about football shirts. And then I started comedy around that same time. And then, yeah, they just let me, like, host it. And then, yeah, so from there, I've just been blagging my way through.
And you blag it well. That's Ben Shepherd did the same thing as that. Ben was a producer, like tea, coffee, run, and that kind of thing. And then walked his way into the legend that he is.
It's better to do that and work your way up and learn the business and learn the disciplines of the business than be thrust into a presentation job by an agent, a pushy agent, when you've neither the ability nor the nous to survive at that early stage of your career as a presenter. I'm not mentioning any names, but there are lots of them out there. Anyway, we got to talk about this because the Tottenham Liverpool one. You know,
right, didn't it?
Well, look, it's Jimmy Savile all over again. We all knew, didn't we? I mean, come on. We all knew. And all of a sudden they go, oh, yeah, it might. I'm Jonathan, what happened? Come on. Yeah,
How did they get that wrong?
Yes.
Well, Simon Hooper was a referee, and he was told too late that the goal against Spurs should have stood. The VAR was Darren England. There's all sorts of rumours going on. Darren England thought the goal had been given and then said review complete. But he's got an assistant referee in there with him, an assistant VAR in there. You know, there's plenty of... It's a fail-safe system. Yeah. And it's not saving any fails at the moment, because that's what should have happened. There's two men in the booth. You know, hang on a minute, the goal hasn't been given. You've got to tell the referee he wasn't offside. And, it's no excuse. There's another, oh, I'm sorry from the PGMOL. Liverpool have said, look, this has got to be reviewed. People are saying the game's going to be replayed. I cannot see that happening because that just opens a can of worms. How far are you going to go back? Should this game be replayed? Should that game be replayed? When Tottenham lost to Liverpool in the Champions League final, it was a big decision there. Well, that one be... You can't do it.
But look, can't it be given as a draw, though?
No.
No.
It's done.
Yeah. Well, it would stand as a draw, though, wouldn't it?
No, it's done, Terry. It's done. Move on. But you have
to
move on.
Personally, I don't like safe... Like, how can I put it? Like, safe controversy. It's either let it be controversial the whole time, no VAR, or if you have VAR, make sure you get it right every time.
Totally. The thing is about it for me, Andrew, is I don't like it at all.
I hate it.
I like the drama of human error. It's humans playing the game. It's humans refereeing the game in the moment. Okay, I know that the VAR is also human beings. I'm not stupid. But then the technology comes involved and all that. Look, if he's made a mistake and called it offside and it's not, then just get on with it. That's the fun of the game. It's what I've always loved about it.
They've also got to be careful. You know, referees travelling abroad all the time. You know, there's talk about these officials going out, taking games in the UAE and then travelling back. Will it exhaust them? Look, hang on a minute. Referees from the UK and all over Europe travel for Champions League matches and then come back and do a Premier League game. No one's fussing about them. But if they're going out to work in the UAE, UAE have got interest in an English club, then you're opening up another can of worms there because, you know, are you going to allow, if referees go out to Saudi, which they're now talking about, and be employed by the Saudi League, well, hang on a minute, and then come back to referee in the Premier League? Well, Newcastle are owned by Saudis. You can't referee a game if you're being employed by the Saudi League. 1 minute, you can't come back and referee a game that could have a massive influence on a Saudi-owned club. So there's got to be more. The whole situation with referees and VAR has got to be looked in more detail. And Jurgen Klopp, I thought, very eloquently made that point. You know, it's now time for resolution. It's time for proper sit-down about VAR. And, you know, whether or not they have an ex-player in there, I don't know. The thing is, boys, you have someone else in there. You know, you've got a referee, two assistants, the fourth official, the VAR, assistant, an ex-professional footballer in there. That's seven. That's seven voices.
People, yeah.
That's seven voices. You know, I mean, I know you're both comedians, so you have voices in your head all the time. That's too many.
The bigger point is what you're saying about the number of people. So what's the point of having the lines people? Let's call them.
That's another thing. Like,
what's the point of having the officials?
What are they seeing that we're not seeing? That's what I don't get. Like, what are they seeing that they go, okay, nah, that's off? That don't make no sense to me. Like, what are you actually seeing that we're not? Because we can see it even in real time. That one was so clearly on.
Yeah, it was.
Even in real time, we can see he's on. It's a goal. So what are they seeing? Are they taking shrooms before each game or something like that?
I wasn't there. I didn't do the game. I did Villa 6, Brighton 1. But what as a commentator at the ground, and you have a feed in your ear of the VAR, so you can hear what the VAR
says. Oh, you can actually hear them talking to each other?
Yeah, yeah. I can't hear what the referee's saying back, but you can hear the referee saying, you need to stop, delay the restart, There's a possible red card for serious foul play, or there's a possible red card for this, or there's a possible offside. Delay the restart, and then he'll go. And that's when you see the referee stopping like this and talking to the players, and then you need to go and see the screen. It's a subjective decision, or you need to go to the screen. Now, what has happened? It's not happening so much this season, but it has happened in the past. As the referees then go into the screen, you'll hear that you used to hear the VAR say something like, what you'll see is the Sheffield United 6 has lifted his foot too high. It's dangerous play on the Tottenham 4. Now, I've always thought that's prejudicial.
Right, because now they're making the referee's mind up.
Mm.
Andrew, when they go across, they've already got perceived. And if you remember the sending off at Spurs on the weekend, the first sending off, when he goes over, there's already a freeze frame on the screen, which shows the foot high on the Tottenham player. So right. he's already seen, that's the first thing he sees. Again, boom, subliminal, it's in there. And then he's going to make his mind up on that, you know.
But I said to myself straight away, he's got to go for that.
I think the way
but that one is more like, okay, I can see people saying it's hard, I can see people saying he has to go. But the offside one is just, it don't make no sense.
No. I thought it was a red card, by the way, because the way he turned his boot, I think he knew what he was doing. Listen, did you go to a game at the weekend, Andrew?
No, I wasn't. I normally go to Palace every week, but if I'm gigging somewhere, they were away at Old Trafford, of course, and I was just gigging in London, so I wouldn't be able to get back in town.
The most annoying thing, I tell you, Jonathan, is when you're in that hometown, where so like Palace, when you're in Manchester and they're playing down at Palace, it's the worst thing, isn't it? And
yeah,
you're like,
yeah.
Oh, God, it just happens to me. I say it happens to me. Come this Tuesday, it may never happen again. But, yeah, the amount of times it happens to me with being a Southend fan, I'm like, I'm in Rochdale, and Rochdale are playing Southend at Southend.
Remind everyone, Terry, what's happening Tuesday?
So, yeah, Tuesday could be the last game for Southend United, and we play Oxford. Get this, Oxford City. Oxford City, not even United.
Wow.
So,
what's happening there?
Well, Scunthorpe are gone, so we have to put that out to the Scunthorpe fans. They've gone now as well, so that's another SUFC team. We're just being completely ripped apart by the ownership, and it looks like we're gonna go under, Andrew. So that's gonna be another team.
So if you go under,
yeah,
what team will you support?
Well, I won't. What I might do is, I mean, this is a question that all fans have to go through, I suppose. Who would you support? But I won't. I won't support anyone, Andrew. But what I would probably go and do is go and watch my local team, which is Chelmsford. If I'm going to go and watch, it's up the road.
I wonder if you fold, Southend United Football Club fold, Terry, on Tuesday or whenever it'll be.
The 4th, I think. I think the court date's the 4th.
Whether the supporters would do a bury and order shot and reform a club under a slightly different name.
Well, that I would get into massively.
AFC one, but then MK.
Correct. Don't. I mean, there's a great story. I mean, yeah, absolutely 100%. If that became the case, and I would obviously get involved with that. But other than that, I won't support anyone.
See, when Bristol City nearly folded back in 1982, it became Bristol City FC, and then in brackets 1982 Limited. I always thought they should have called it Bristol City FC brackets the future European champions, and it's never quite worked out. Here we are, 41 years later, and
can I ask, with so much money in the game on relatively all levels, how does a club fold? Like,
well, I think
where are they not making money? Is it in the tickets? Is it in the TV? Like, what's going on there?
Who knows? Who knows, Andrew? You don't know, do you? Because I don't honestly know. But there is that thing. I do argue now why the likes of, say, I don't know, Tottenham's or West Ham's. Why can't they now start buying teams like Southend and playing? You know, they're 23s that are sitting around waiting to play games, you know, and like Barcelona do and whatever. I mean, I think it's got to get to a place. I mean, as a fan, would I like that? Probably not. But if I want my team to survive, then probably I would, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I'm not keen on that at all.
Jonathan, no, nor am I, Jonathan, but I'd rather them go out. Say again, Andrew.
Jonathan was not convinced on that.
No, he's not convinced on that. But I'm just saying, unless, of course, then the bigger teams start feeding money down to the smaller clubs. I mean, you know, then there should be some, I don't know, some sort of tax, but I don't know what it would be. But it's a house of cards. You'll watch. Don't think Premier League teams aren't, away from this. The likes of teams can come down, like Huddersfield, for example, and just start plummeting. You know, no one's safe from any of this. You may go, we've got 100 million in the bank, but that's gone in no time. It's just awful. Anyway, this is a cheery one, isn't it, today? Poor old Andrew's come on a cheery note. Who would you support, Andrew, if you didn't have Palace then?
Do you know what? My local team is Charlton. Charlton, yeah. But the thing about Charlton, I used to go to Charlton as a kid, and like, I had to stop going because the football was so rubbish. So it didn't make me want to love it. Right. It didn't make me love football. I was there when Van Persie scored that goal. Do you know the volley?
Yeah.
Wasn't Pauly there then? Was Chris there? Pauly manager when you used to go?
Yeah, so that sank Charlton that day, that volley. Sank Charlton. Never been back since.
Way back. Way before you were around, Andrew, and possibly Terry, Charlton Athletic used to have this South Bank, and it used to. And my old man used to take me to grounds. I think I mentioned it on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. He took me to Fratton Park, Portsmouth, just to hear what's called the Pompey Chimes from the fans. And we went to Charlton Athletic just to see that South Bank. And for me, it just went up and up and up to heaven. It was just so big. It was so big. So we went there. Can't even remember the game. I just remember, I think it was 1967, 60, something like that. I just saw amazed, you know. And whenever I worked, when I was at Capital Gold, our relationship with Charlton was absolutely fantastic. The directors and everything, and when Kirby was manager, we had such a relationship with them. But I might have told you this story before. I can't remember. Stop me if I have. But we did a game there, Tony Gale and myself, and we had this link with Charlton Athletic, right, where we were commercially linked with them. So our commentary was going out to the ground and various things, and we were doing this commentary, and I was at home. Graham Pohl was the referee. Remember Graham Pohl?
Yeah, double cards.
Yeah, I didn't really like Graham Pohl much. Anyway, so it gets to half time, right, and we take an advertising break, and Tony and I were talking in the advertising break. We're going, what about Graham Pohl? And Gailey's gone, you know, what an effing wanker. What an effing wanker. Complete effing scene.
Please
all this
tell
sort
me
of
you're
stuff.
Not online.
Right. Anyway, so there's a front row of the stand, and they're all doing this. They're jumping up and down and celebrating all this sort of stuff. And we're carrying on going. We're looking at these going, what are these people? What are they on down there? What are they on down there? Well, look at them. They're a bit mental. Anyway, this steward runs up and goes, you're still broadcasting to the Charlton blind supporters, the special link that Capital have set up with the blind supporters of Charlton. You're still talking to them live. We didn't know anything. We didn't know this existed, right? So we're going, apparently, we're off air. We're not on air. But to them, we were. So, yeah, apparently, we're broadcasting to you lot down there, aren't we? Yes. They're jumping up and down. What do you think of Graham Pohl down there? They've all stood up. And as one, they've done a certain
coffee
gesture.
Shakers. Coffee shaking.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, so we enjoyed Charlton. Anyway, Andrew, how's Ebby? How's Ebby Eze, your cousin? How's he at the moment? You speak to him?
He's good. I was with him yesterday. We went out yesterday, family little outing. He's good, man. He's doing well. He's like, obviously Zaha's left, isn't it? So he's now like taking on that mantle as the main guy. So I think he's, the thing about Ebbs though, like he's always, even like growing up, he always like relished being the guy and relished the challenge. So like always playing football on the estate, we'll all be playing good. And then when the older kids came and was like, show us a little thing, most of us would shell, whereas he would excel in that. So I feel like it's going to be like a big year for him coming out of like the Zaha shadow, because Zaha is Palace's greatest ever player. You know what I mean? He's just like, he was the guy. So now that he's gone, it's now like his time, and he's kind of relishing in that life.
Can I be really thick and ask? I only do a football podcast. Where did Zaha go?
Galatasaray.
Galatasaray. Yeah,
that's interesting that he went there. Was that a money thing?
People think he was going to go Saudi, but he want to play Champions League, innit?
Yeah. And he came on the other day in the first group game. Came on and affected in the first group game as well. Did Zaha. Now, Ebby Eze, one thing I'd like to ask you about. He's a Greenwich boy, isn't he? He comes from South London. What was he like when it wasn't working for him? Because not a lot of people know about...
Hold on. I've got a war going on in here. Hold on.
This is life going on, isn't it?
Yeah, real life. Terry's he's got his problem with his dogs. He's now... I'm not too sure whether that's Terry's dogs or Terry doing an impersonation of his dogs.
You can leave that and I'll cut that out. It's up to you.
Yeah. What was Ebby like when it wasn't working for him? Because not a lot of people realise that Ebby was at Arsenal as a kid, rejected. Fulham as a kid, rejected. Reading as a kid, rejected. Millwall as a kid, rejected. Before he went on to Queen's Park Rangers. What was he like during that period?
The same guy. Like, obviously, that we grew up in like a very religious kind of family. So we always just, it's a, like, faith is like a big thing for all of us. So it was always about his journey rather than failures. And it was like, you know, this path that he's on, it's just the path that God has like taken him on. And it was just like, he was never wavered. Never Wonderful. Felt like he wasn't going to make it. Never gave that impression ever. Even like, I took him to his first training session at QPR. The first day he was on trial. I just joined BT and I was an apprentice at BT. I got my first paycheck and I basically saved 3 months and got a car. got a little Renault Twingo, and I had no petrol in it. So his older sister calls me saying, could you take a barrier to like QPR? And I've basically told Kelechi, like, I can't, like, I have no petrol. So she gave me £10 to put in the petrol. So we literally drive through central London. I didn't know about congestion charge, any of that. So he still owes me that congestion charge. So we drive, we get there, and like the whole journey, it wasn't like a guy thinking, oh, this is my last chance, or they're not going to accept me. It was just a guy who thought, I'm going to play football and I'm happy to play football. And he always had confidence that he was going to get through it. And I feel like all the times he got rejected, it had nothing to do with his footballing ability, but people don't know that Ebbs was really, really small as a kid and like really flimsy and that. So like technically he was always like one of the best, but he was just like get moved off the ball sometimes. But I feel like at that period he started growing and started getting bigger, started being in the gym. So I just kind of knew like once that kind of crosses over, he'll be fine. And yeah, so like he was honestly like, how he is now, his temperament, he's like, he's never like too high with the highs and never too lows with the lows. So he was just always like, just like got a job to do sort of thing.
That's a great story. It's just a proof, isn't it, to everyone, just never give up, really. I mean, that's just a great story.
My first paycheck in broadcasting was £16 from BBC Radio Bristol, a game, right?
That's and slave money.
I never got petrol money. I never had petrol money. I was at university at the time, but say I've had to go to Hartlepool from Birmingham, I'd have to drive up there on my own money and come back. So £16 rapidly became minus £1.5 where it was. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and, I remember. Go on, sorry, John.
And my first paycheck when I was in full-time broadcasting was £100 a week. Tell you?
No, I remember going up to Newcastle for a tenner when I first started, and I got all the way up there, and then same thing as you, Andrew. I had no petrol to get back, so I couldn't call my mum or anything because it was too late after the gig. So I found a little village that had a little dark sort of car park, which I pulled over and, you know, laid back in the car. I thought I'd keep here until the morning. And then there was a street light. I remember this. It was a street light booming down on me, and I'd been took some, you know, clean bits with me. So I put the pants, my clean pants from my bag on my head. And then I woke up in the morning to people just walking around my car. I parked right in front of a really well-to-do church. So these people go into church on the Sunday, and there's me in the back of this car with just pants, boxer shorts on my head. So, yeah, and then eventually Mum gave me some money and I got home. But, yeah.
The things haven't changed much for you then, really.
No. I still earn nothing and walk around with pants on my head, crying, though, these days. Crying into them. What about you, Andrew? What, have you had a gig experience?
The Howlers. Yeah, I remember one time I drove to Stratford upon Avon on a Tuesday. On like a Tuesday, I just drove 3 hours, got there, and I get there. The gig starts at 8:00. I get there at 7:00. So I walk in. There's no one there, of course. The guy goes, "Oh yeah, the gig starts at 8:00." I was like, "Oh yeah, sweet." So I go to like a Wetherspoons. I get something to eat. I'm chilling, whatever. So I get there around, I say 8:05 to 8:00, and still nobody is there. So now it's 8:20. No one's there, innit? So I said to the guy, like, "Yo, bro, like, you didn't know anyone? You didn't know anyone's coming?" And he was just like, "No, I'm sorry, like, you know, it's a Tuesday, rest of the day." So I was like, "Bro, I just drove 3 hours and that." He's like, "Yeah, I'll still pay you and that." But he was paying me like £40 anyway. So I was just like, "You know what? Okay, I'm gonna go." As I'm walking out, this lady comes in and she's pushing a guy in a wheelchair. And they're like, "Oh, like, we're here for the comedy." And they literally, so the guy looks at me like, "What are you saying, bro?" And I just said, I'm not as well. So I kind of brought them on stage with me. And I just said, "I've got these ideas I want to talk about." We just had a writing session, basically. And I drove home that night just thinking, what am I doing with my life?
I think we've got to take a break. We'll come back and talk about fantasy football.
Yeah, break time. Yeah, lovely.
Back in a moment.
The Football Friendly.
Welcome back to JP and Tina, football friendly. Andrew Mensah's our guest today. Palace fan because his cousin's Ebiezi. And also, fantasy football has been back with us. And you're very much part of that. And just tell us about that. How's that going? Because, goodness me, that had a tradition. That had a legacy, didn't it?
Mm. Before I go into that, Jonathan, you know, it's mad. I'm hearing your voice and you're talking to me. I've been listening to you since I was five on Match of the Day. That's crazy. But, yeah. Oh, this is mad. I can't
even lie. I know. It's still mad for me. Still mad.
Your voice is too iconic, bro. Do you know that?
I still feel very young at heart and I still love my football. But when I'm doing a game, like I did Villa Brighton at the weekend, and young Jack Inchwood made his debut for Brighton, right? And his great granddad, Wally, played for Bristol City and Chelsea, and I remember his great granddad.
Oh wow!
then his granddad Paul, I remember seeing him play, and his great uncle Martin, and his dad Adam. I commentated on him playing for Brighton Hove Albion, and now I've commentated on Wally's great great grandson. And then when you think, you know, and then all the 42 years I've been doing it suddenly come back into focus, you know, and you think, wow. I am
busy.
I think I'm the oldest now in terms of mainstream TV and radio.
Because
Martin Tyler, I think, he says he hasn't retired, but he's not doing it at the moment.
Yeah, I
don't know what's happened to him. But anyway, thank you very much for that compliment, Andrew. You made me feel bloody anxious. Thank you very much.
How old are you now, Andrew? You're only a baby, aren't you?
I'm 28. I just turned 28.
Yeah, baby. Right, what was the question?
Fantasy
football, yes.
Mad. It's like, I couldn't believe that. So, like, obviously, I didn't really know. Obviously, I heard of fantasy football, Frank Skinner and Badil. Because you know what it is? It was like a mad full circle moment. So, I went to Wembley in the Euros when England beat Germany. Do you remember the 2-0 game?
Mm-hmm.
And they were, like, in a section above me, Badil and Skinner. And everyone, like, they came in, everyone was clapping for them because obviously the song was big that year because we thought we was going to win it. And I was thinking, who the hell are those two old guys people are clapping for? They're not footballers. I would have known who they were, innit? So I was like, that's Frank Skinner and David Badil. I was like, wow. So it's like, yeah. So then, like, a couple months later, I get a call from my agent basically saying they want to bring back fantasy football. Producer would like to meet you. So I was like, yeah, sounds cool. And then, literally the next day she called me again, like we agreed the time, and she called me again saying, could I move the time to like 3 p.m. because Matt Lucas wants to meet you. So I was like, what? Matt Lucas? That's crazy. So yeah, we had a meeting, and normally, like, I've done loads of those, like, Terry, you know, like, you do loads of those production meetings, you're in and out 20 minutes, they're seeing like 10 people that day. But literally me, Matt and Spencer Millman, the producer, was just in there for like 4 or 5 hours just talking. Literally just talking football and comedy, really. And we just had built that connection sort of thing. And obviously, it was a bit surreal because, like, obviously, Little Britain, Matt's like a childhood hero of mine. And then I met Ellis James, who I'd known on the circuit. And then we just kind of just, like, all formed us a little bond. But then I just, doing some research for the show, I was reading Frank Skinner's book. But I didn't realise how monumental the show was back in the day, because obviously when it was aired, that it was 93, I wasn't even born. So it's then I was just like, okay, we just got to do it right and not make it like a mockery out of, like, you know, something that was proper iconic. And they gave us their blessings. And then, yeah, it's just kind of like changed my life in a sense of, like, because as you said, Jonathan, you met me at, like, at BT, and I always felt like my comedy and my football was, like, separate. Do you know what I mean? I was, like, presenting, and then I would go do gigs somewhere in a village somewhere. It was, like, fantasy football kind of was, like, the mesh between the two worlds I was in. Yeah, yeah.
I did the iDance for that, you know, for Sky. So I knew you were in it, because I did all the, you know, coming on Sky this Friday. Fantasy football is back. Yeah, I did all that, yeah. So I knew it was, I was like, oh, Ellis James, and then I was like, Matt Lucas, and I was like, oh, my God, Andrew. So I saw your little face come up on the screen in front of me, because when you do the voiceover, you get, you know, so I have to wait for you to come up and say, and Andrew Mensah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's quite crazy. Yeah, it's me doing that, yeah.
Fucking hell.
On Fantasy, on Sky. Sky. I can't remember what a voice it was doing. It's either that or one of those kind of voices. Fantasy football is back.
Yeah, that's crazy.
They used to, in the original, I don't know if you saw runs of the original one, a friend of mine called Angus Loughran.
Angus
not,
came
he's
on.
He's not been well. Stato. He's not been well in recent years. He used to, I mean, it was bizarre. If you remember, he used to stand in the kitchen of Fantasy Football in his pyjamas. And he'd have his pyjamas on and a dressing gown, I think, and just spout off footballing facts and stats. And Angus has got them all up there. He's brilliant on horse racing as well. Big friend of Sir Alex Ferguson. And yeah, he was like made Stato's name. And Jeff Astor, they used to do the reruns. Remember when they used to set up famous goals from the past? So is it going well?
It's going well, yeah. So we kept like a load of those elements. So like our show still has Phoenix of the Flames.
Yeah.
We still have like, you know, Jeff used to come out and sing at the end of the show. So
yeah, that's right.
You have Lee Trundle, the ex Swansea City player that does that because he's Ellis is James's hero.
Yeah, he's a good lad at Leeds as well. He's a great lad. What a flipping skill machine he was.
Just street footballer.
Stupid, yeah.
So yeah, so it's been going well. We're coming back in January. So I'm looking forward to that. Some days I can't believe, like, I'm just talking shit about football and I'm getting paid to do it. It's just like, it's an absolute dream, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's great. It's great, mate, and you deserve it. You deserve it, Andrew. Like Thanks, I said, man. If people haven't seen him, they should see him live as well. He's a really brilliant comedian.
Thank you. I appreciate
really
it.
Really, very good.
Do you get hammered, though, for your opinions? Because that's the major difference now with the social media coming through. You know, as a commentator, people go, do you get upset by it? And I don't get upset by it because I've got broad shoulders and I've been around long enough. And also the fact that whatever you say, you're going to get hammered, you know.
For me personally, like, obviously growing up in South London, I'm not going to sugarcoat, it was really tough, innit? And I've been in like crazy situations. So someone talking shit about a joke or opinion I have that does nothing for, it doesn't like, it's not serious. Do you know what I mean? Mm. I just don't take it serious. It doesn't like affect me in any way sort of thing. And also like these people don't know you. These
Correct.
People are just like hiding behind their little Millwall, profile picture, you don't even know who these people are. Do you know what I mean? So it's just like, I kind of just ultimately know, like, if my intentions from a joke are pure, if I don't mean any ill malice behind it, then fuck you. That's how I look at
it. Well, the thing is as well, you know, as someone once said to me, you know, it's when the people who you care and love start calling you an arsehole, that's when you got to worry. Not people you don't know. You're right, they don't know you.
Yeah, they don't know you. Or they just want, some people just want a reaction. Like, I posted a clip where I asked a few people, like, who's the most overrated footballer? And a girl on the show, like, gave an opinion. And then some guy just wrote a mad sexist comment. And it's just like, he just wants a reaction from me.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? He don't actually mean what he's saying. He just wants to be controversial. And a lot of people are like that, you know? Mm. And that's, like, the downside of social media. It's like, people just feel like, oh, let me just poke at this guy just because I can, and there's no consequence for them.
Do you know, I heard on the radio last night an Italian journalist saying, talking about the Napoli thing, was Osimhen, you know, and this thing that came on TikTok.
The coconut thing?
Blatant.
Have you not seen it? It's absolutely unbelievable.
It's terrible. It's shocking on so many levels.
It's unbelievable. I couldn't believe it.
It's so wrong. And the journalists were saying, yeah, but you've got to understand the Napoli TikTok account. They do this. They take the mickey out of their own players.
That's just beyond.
And he was defending it. He was saying, I'm not defending it, but this is what you have to understand. They've got millions and millions of viewers on TikTok. It's blatantly racist of their own player. And it suggests to me that Osimhen and Napoli will part ways in January and they possibly want that to happen.
Well, even worse for him as well. Coconut is, as Andrew will tell you, is even deeper than just being racist. You're actually pointing out something about the man amongst his own society, if you like, his own people. I don't think someone has quite realised, I don't think they realise the connotation of the coconut between the black community. I don't think they've even taken that into account. Andrew, would I be wrong on that?
Yeah, no, it's obviously, when you see things like that, it's just someone who's like, is not culturally in tune or doesn't understand those nuances, like you're saying.
Yes, exactly. And it's deeper for him, you know, because he must be thinking, "What am I, a coconut? What the?"
Yeah,
it's
not. Yeah, exactly.
That's how I think he would be thinking. He'd be thinking, "When did I become a coconut?
Who thinks?"
Whereas most white people would be thinking, "You're calling a black guy a coconut, and that's not right." It's deeper than that, Andrew.
Yeah,
right, aren't I?
I think we're just, well, you know. We don't often do deep things on this podcast, no. Andrew, because we haven't got brains.
This show's been a bit deep, though. I thought it was friendly.
But you've got a Palace shirt on. So what I was going to say
is,
while we're here, we need to pay tribute to Stevie Coppell, because you know, your cousin plays for a football club that made huge strides. And Stevie Coppell brought in Bright and Wright and Andy Gray and Richard Shaw, and they had a lot of black players at the time when clubs didn't. And therefore, a lot of black fans started coming to Sellers Park, and you know, where they hadn't. And I think Stevie Coppell, for loads of reasons, he's one of my heroes. Was as a player, and was as a manager. And I think just while we're talking about this serious thing, we need to pay tribute to him, I think. And well done, Stevie Coppell. Well done, Palace.
He had a horse named after him, though, Stevie Coppell. And my mate Kevin Healy, who's an Irish lad, he runs a brilliant gig out in Ireland, in Galway, one of my favourite places in the world, in fact. But yeah, there was a horse called Stevie Coppell, and because he was a big Man United fan, so they always used to just put lots of money on Stevie Coppell. Come on, Stevie!
Wait, talk about Irish. Sorry, this is back to friendly now. Have you seen the clip of Shane Lowry at the Ryder Cup? Well done, they were brilliant. It was gripping TV, gripping radio. He's about to take a shot, right, in the light rough, and the crowd's behind him, and the steward's gone, shh, shut up now, shh, 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 quiet now, quiet now. And Shane Lowry turns around to the steward and goes, listen, you're making more fucking noise than they are all put together. And then gets on with it. Which is how golf has changed, because I think if a golfer used the F word in years gone by, he probably would have never played golf again. But it was great. I loved the Ryder Cup. Fantastic.
Oh man, are you going to go on a little tour, Andrew, or do you think you're going to use this elevation?
No. Yeah, man, I'm just working on my first hour now. I'm doing like loads of previews, so hopefully the end of next year, I'll be trying to take a tour. But obviously, I need to take my time, because Terry, you know how hard it is to for a good hour, innit?
Yeah.
I don't want to be that guy that has people come and go, yeah, but he was kind of rubbish.
I think it takes 10 years to get your first good hour.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, because you work on you think about it, you'll do loads and loads and loads of material over the years, and then after 10 years, you'll go, oh, that was brilliant, and no one will remember that bit, and then you'll cobble together all your greatest moments, and they go, oh, you're doing the greatest hit show. It's not the greatest hit show. You're going to go out there and blow it away with the greatest stuff that you do because you enjoy doing it.
Yeah.
So, and that takes a long time to get that pure. That's why, like when Mickey Flanagan, for everyone else, you know, hit it, and everyone went, wow, this is amazing. Well, you got to remember, he was 49 by the time he did that. You know, he'd had all that.
He'd been on the circuit for years before.
Yeah, so he started late, to be fair, but he started when he was about 38. So he had about 11 years to all of a sudden go, wow, this guy's good. You know. Yeah.
And that's kind of how I want to do it. I don't want to just like.
You haven't got to rush it, Andrew. You're only 28.
Yeah, I don't
want
to rush anything.
You don't need to rush it. You know, and I know. You know, even if you took it out and about and thought it's not ready yet, don't rush it out until you truly think to yourself, right, I want to take this around the place now.
And Terry, I'll ask you this. And yes. You know, we've known each other. We've been friends for so many years. But I don't think I've ever asked you this question, because you have your style and the way you do it, which is absolutely unique. But do you ever watch, and you have that direction, do you ever watch anyone else, and even, you know, at this stage of your career, you've been around for years, oh, I like the way he does it, so I might incorporate, not his material, but the
you
way...
You mean like the
inspired.
God, thank you, Andrew. No, I tell you what happened to me.
No one inspires the great Terry Alderton.
That sounds like a right wanker. Well, I am. No, I tell you what it is for me. What happened to me was, like you say, if people know what I do, they know. But if you don't, I can't bother to explain it. But it is unique and different, yeah. But what I think for me happened was I fell across things. Like I found Born Standing Up, which is a brilliant book by Steve Martin, and read that. And then I found the likes of Andy Kaufman, however you want to call him, you know, Man on the Moon. You know, the song, yeah, with R.E.M., you know, which is all about him. You know, I watched him and then thought to myself, you know, because I was panicking that I was doing this really out there stuff and going, oh, but is this right or wrong? And then I found these people and then I thought, oh, actually, it gave me confidence to continue forward. So, but no, I very rarely watch anybody. It's very, very rare for me, if I'm honest, to watch someone I haven't seen and go, it's just usually the same stuff. So maybe I'm a comedy snob, I don't know, but I like people doing different stuff. And you know, Andrew's definitely one of those. I've seen a couple of people lately, though, where I've gone, that was good. Yeah, I saw Djembe. Is it Djembe? I can't say his name. What's his bloody last name? He's a Nigerian comedian. Oh, Djembe.
Oh, Bemi Oladipo.
Yeah, I can't. He
raps with me on fantasy football. He's brilliant.
Right. I saw him the other night. He was fantastic. I saw him we were at Comedia, and not in Brighton, but in Bath. He was fantastic.
Yeah, he was
fantastic. And he did all that stuff about the Kama Sutra book and all that, and ticking the stuff. He was really, really good. Really good. So we started in the same
few months. We met at like the Cavendish Arms together. We've been friends ever since. I used to think this guy, he came up to me.
He's very serious, isn't he, when you first meet him?
Super energetic. And I was like, this guy's a freaking weirdo. and then he went on stage and it was funny. That's what it is. Like, it's almost like footballers as well. When you see a guy and it's like, it could be weird, but when he's good at football, you're just like, I like this guy. Do you know?
Yeah. I love it when he does that thing all the time on stage. He keeps doing this through and he goes, he's got like this catchphrase. It's not a catchphrase. He's really good, Jonathan. You'd like him. He's really
when I go and see Terry doing gigs, Andrew, with people, you know, I say, have you seen Terry before? And no, we've heard all about him. We're really, really looking forward to seeing him. And they come up to me afterwards and they say, oh, wow, he's unbelievable, wasn't he? Is he seriously mental? And I say, absolutely. 100%.
People will say it to me all the time. You're not well in the head, are you? I go, what, are any of us?
I have to say before we come to the end that you, like, as a commentator, I do try and learn even now. Right, I've been doing it 43 years. So the Radio Boys, Radio 5 Live in Rome for the Ryder Cup, they're just all exceptional broadcasters. And I do try and think, well, I can make, you know, that style, that's interesting. And, you know, they got people there, the BBC, I hope they realise who they've got. Because Mark Chapman is a broadcasting genius. Alistair Bruce Ball, you know, fantastic, wonderful broadcaster. They all are, big Johnny Murray and the whole team. So I do try and learn from them. I don't think you should ever stop learning as a commentator and try and pick things up. And there's a little wise word for young commentators in the game coming through now, who, one or two of them, I won't mention them by name, but they think they're already there and they're not.
Wow.
Wow!
You heard it from the man himself. You're not there, whoever you are.
Andrew, they know who they are.
Oh, Andrew, it's so lovely having you on. It's never long enough. That's like, look at that already. 43 minutes shot by.
Give our best to your cousin because I think he's a terrific player and will go on and be a star at international level.
As you will, Andrew. You're gonna people don't know Andrew Mensah that yet. They are going to know him.
Do you think we'll progress Terry Alderton and become international stars?
No, we'll just be doing this for the rest of our lives.
We're past
just
now.
Going, we'll be going, no, we had Andrew on our show. Andrew! And he'll be going, no, nah, not now, boys.
We'll be sitting on a bus.
Charity later, lads.
Andrew, we'll be the ones who are sitting in a bus shelter going, you know, so-and-so. Yeah. Oh, no, he's dead now. And that'll be us. That'd be us.
With a big picture in the bus stop of Andrew, new tour. And me going, look, see, there's another one's jumped over me back.
We'll have no teeth. We'll be dribbling.
Dribbling.
Can't hear. That's just today.
Don't forget, you can get us on Twitter at JPNT. Again, thanks for listening. And thanks, Jonathan. And thanks to producer Paul, the magic man. He's going to come in at the end there. No, okay. And, of course, thank you very much, Andrew Mensah.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you.
Sports Social Podcast Network.